Hello and welcome to the Thursday, March 2nd edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, the KTOO studios. We've got a great show. We'll be chatting with Colleen James. She's here to talk about the upcoming Native Oratory event this Saturday. We'll also talk with two of AWARE's four women of distinction. Then we'll learn about the Southeast Alaska Boy Scouting programs and the Eagle Scout Recognition Banquet. And then we'll end with Nancy DeCharney with Arts Up. Stay tuned, all that and more.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A radio host in Montana has been suspended indefinitely after writing a blog post suggesting Native American high school teams should play in separate postseason basketball tournaments. Nikki Ouellette reports.
The Billings, Montana radio personality Paul Mushabin posted on Cat Country Radio Station's website that crowds for Indian teams are unruly and disrespectful, adding, quote, "It's not safe anymore." The post was taken down the same day it went up, but not before screenshots were shared on social media across the state. The following day, four high school teams, two from reservation towns, linked arms in a show of solidarity before a tournament game. Mushabin was suspended indefinitely 2 days after publishing the post. Now, people in Billings are protesting his suspension, saying he's not racist and voicing surprise at the contention the post stirred up. Mushabin's co-host on his daily show has voluntarily taken himself off the air in response to Mushabin's suspension. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
A recent internal audit of the Navajo Nation Veterans Housing Program found years of mismanagement and flawed financial accounting. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports the tribe's Veterans Administration has submitted a plan to fix it.
The audit found poor accountability of nearly $2 million in building materials used for the housing program. It also showed shoddy construction that resulted in uninhabitable homes on the Navajo Nation. In addition, some veterans who were ineligible for the program were still selected to receive housing. More than 350 applicants are currently on the waiting list. Navajo President Russell Begay says the tribal VA's plan calls for higher quality services and increased fiscal accountability. It would require improved documentation and tracking of housing projects. The Navajo Veterans Housing Program is designed to reduce homelessness and provide safe, affordable housing and construction jobs for Navajo veterans. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heiches in Flagstaff.
March is when herring return to spawn in the waters of Southeast Alaska, attracting commercial fishers from around the state. As Emily Russell reports, the tribe in Sitka is drafting proposals to protect the subsistence rights of tribal citizens.
Just a few weeks from now, Sitka Sound will flood with commercial seiners and subsistence users, all in search of one small fish, herring. But Sitka Tribe of Alaska's Director of Resource Protection, Jeff Feldpouch, says success rates for subsistence users, they're down.
We're seeing a change in the herring as to how they spawn, where they spawn, and it's making it much more difficult for subsistence harvesters to meet the ANS or the amount necessary for subsistence.
Feldpouch says subsistence needs have only been met half the time in recent years, with 2016 considered one of the poorest subsistence harvests in memory. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is forecasting a biomass of 73,000 tons for 2017.
The 2017 biomass in the forecast has no scientific proof.
Tribal citizen Tom Gamble says Fish and Game's forecast model is outdated, that they're just guessing. But Eric Coonrad has confidence in the model.
There's going to be skeptics out there, but the data is solid. The methods are solid.
Coonrad is Fish and Game's area management biologist for Sitka. But some say the data doesn't reflect the poor subsistence harvests. So Sitka Tribe of Alaska's Herring Committee is drafting two proposals to the Alaska Board of Fish. The first would close off certain areas to commercial fishing, and the second would cut the guideline harvest level, or how much commercial fishermen are allowed to catch, in half. The final proposals are due to the Board of Fish April 11th. For National Native News, I'm Emily Russell.
A former Indian Health Service pediatrician in South Dakota has been charged with sexual abuse. The Rapid City Journal reports Stanley Patrick Weber pleaded not guilty in federal court Wednesday. He's accused of abusing Native children on the Pine Ridge Reservation. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's a live show coming at you from the KTOO studios in Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and we're in the middle of a winter storm warning. We're supposed to get another 6 inches tonight. Actually, 6 inches today and another 3 or 4 tonight, so we're looking at a total of maybe 10 inches of snow. Tomorrow, continuing snow right through tomorrow night. So right now it's 28 degrees at the Juneau International Airport, and it is light snow. So here we are, Juneau Afternoon. Our first guests are Colleen James and Lyle James. They're here. They took a little trek from the University of Alaska Southeast to talk to us about what's going on tomorrow night. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Colleen, you are the director of the Native and Rural Student Center?
Right, the coordinator.
Okay, mm-hmm. For the UAS.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that center?
Sure. So the Native and Rural Student Center is a place for students to come and get academic support for like tutoring or to get involved with leadership development or clubs. We're also a resource for our faculty and staff when it comes to getting access to elders and excellent culture bearers to help raise awareness about the Native cultures around our state. And we're also a home away from home. And we have a lot of good food for our students. So, and that's my way. I figured out early on that if I have snacks in the center, I know that my students will figure out how to check in with me because they might want to get a snack. So it helps me to know where my students are, you know, if they need some academic support or if they need some just a sounding board. So it's a win-win.
Right.
It's a good space on campus.
That sounds great because for so many of us, Juneau is just home, but Juneau could be the big city to a lot of people who are going to your school.
Yeah.
So that's great. Well, speaking of excellent cultural bearers, using your own words, in the studio with us is Lyle James, and he is a professor, an adjunct professor, and he is teaching oratory. He's teaching an oratory class this semester, and tomorrow night is the 15th annual oratory showcase at UAS. Actually, it's not tomorrow night. It's Saturday from 1 to 3.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about this annual oratory showcase. Who wants to talk about that?
Would you like to talk about it, or you want to jump in?
I'll jump in.
Okay. So oratory is the art of speech, and this event draws on our cultural traditions, and not just from Southeast, but from all over Alaska. And with the art of oratory, students are able to draw on traditional storytelling from their villages or from their tribes. They're also able to draw on dramatic declamation from Native American authors, poets, song composers, even elders. And of course, the beautiful part about this event is our native languages, our world languages, are part of the event and encouraged. So this weekend will be the 15th year that we host this event for students. The event itself is an opportunity for students to speak passionately about an issue that's impacting Alaskans, and it could be any kind of topic ranging from education to access to healthcare services, and the students will speak to their personal experiences, and then they'll broaden out their presentation to community experiences, national statistics, and should be a very informative, inclusive, exciting gathering. And it's a two-hour event, 1 to 3. In the past, we've had our oratory events start at 10 in the morning and not get over until 7 o'clock at night, and all of us completely drained emotionally and probably drained from all of the public speaking. The students really put themselves out there. They expose vulnerability as well as their strengths. It's a beautiful community event. It's probably one of the hardest selling events. It's one of those events that I have, I don't have immediate buy-in from students, because public speaking is like one of the top world fears. And this is a public speaking event. And anyway, but having said that, we have probably 12 to 15 students who have committed to come forward and give a 5 to 15 minute presentation.
Wow.
Yeah. So should be pretty amazing. We have a wonderful public and university folks who have been identified by the students as people that they would love to get feedback from. So we'll have some forms that we'll give out to some of the designated folks who come forward and attend our event on Saturday. They'll listen to the students' presentations. They'll fill out a form and give them all sorts of great feedback. And then the students will take it and use the information to improve their presentations. And the outcome from this oratory is they will take it to the next step, whether it's down at our legislative offices or out to our Board of Regents. They'll take action with their presentations. So this step on Saturday is kind of helping them polish, putting the finishing touches on their presentations before they send it out.
Wow, that sounds really wonderful. It sounds like a lot of people have been putting a lot of hard work into it.
Yeah.
Facing their fears and showing up and speaking for 5 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So where is this at the university?
It's out at the rec center.
Okay, great. Right.
And it is open to the public. we encourage high school aged, maybe middle school, but definitely high school age students on up to elders to attend. Some of the presentations might be
some of the stories that you'll hear will be a little hard to hear, because it's hard to comprehend what some of these students have gone through, and they express that when they speak, and they actually tell their story, the hard journey that got them to where they are now. So it's hard to swallow, because they put their emotion out there, and this, but you also leave inspired to want to see change and help influence the change.
Yeah. I would agree that even though some of our students stepping up, even though they may have experienced some of these traumatic events in their childhood, and they're able to talk about it now in their, you know, in their college life, might be a little too much for a younger audience. But at the same time I say that, I also want to encourage if families are talking about these types of topics, hearing our students share their stories as well as the research, so they're going to identify problems and they're also going to offer solutions and a call to action. So it's empowering.
Sounds really powerful. Yeah. It really does. It sounds really powerful to be witness of somebody's truth, of their journey, and just really being present as they share that. I mean, that's big. That's really big. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We have Colleen James and Lyle James in the studio. We're talking about the 15th Annual Oratory Showcase, and it's going to happen 1 to 3 on Saturday at the Rec Center.
Yes.
So thank you so much for both for coming in. Would you like to add anything? I think we covered everything, but is there...
I would encourage, if you have time, 1 to 3, come and join us. It's a beautiful showcase. We've had so many wonderful past student leader presenters go on to do some amazing things in their communities from this experience. And this year, I have the same high expectation. There's just quality students. And we even have a couple of high school students joining the showcase this year, so pretty excited.
It kind of seems like, to me, to be wrong by all means, tell me if I am, it's like the oratory arts, it's like weaving arts and social action and political action.
Absolutely.
It sounds really fabulous.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today and all that you do for our community.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 2nd of March, 2017. The novelist John Irving, born on this day in Exeter, New Hampshire, 1942, whose first big successful novel was The World According to Garp, came out in 1978. It's the birthday of Theodore Geisel, Springfield, Massachusetts, 1904, who wrote under the name Dr. Seuss. His first book for children, 1937, and To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. In 1955, an educator asked Dr. Seuss if he'd write a book to help children learn how to read, and gave him a list of 300 words that most first graders know, and he had to write the book using only those words. And that was the book that would become The Cat in the Hat. It uses only 220 different words. Later, Seuss's publisher bet him $50 that he couldn't write a book using only 50 different words, and Seuss won the bet with his book Green Eggs and Ham. It's the birthday of the journalist and novelist Tom Wolfe, born in Richmond, Virginia, 1931, author of The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, The Right Stuff, and many other books. He got a Ph.D. at Yale, but decided to go into newspaper reporting. And then during a newspaper strike in New York City, when he lost his job at the paper he worked for, he decided to pitch an idea to Esquire magazine for a story about the hot rod car culture around Southern California. He had a hard time trying to write the piece, finally just turned in his notes, and Esquire published the notes. And that was The Candy-Colored Tangerine Flake Streamlined Baby. It came out in 1965. Tom Wolfe wrote an essay a few years ago arguing that the newspaper industry would stand a much better chance of survival if editors encouraged reporters to provide the emotional reality of the news rather than just the facts. He said there are four technical devices needed to get to the emotional core of the story, devices that are used in fiction. And those devices are, 1, constructing scenes, 2, dialogue, lots of it, 3, carefully noting social status details, everything from dress and furniture to the infinite status clues of speech, how one talks to superiors or inferiors. And 4, point of view, in the Henry James sense of putting the reader inside the mind of someone other than the writer. Those, said Tom Wolfe, are the devices that give fiction its absorbing or gripping quality, that make the reader feel present in the scene described and even inside the skin of a particular character. Here's a poem for today by Joseph Mills entitled Turning. My friend's kid runs the sideline, gets a pass, turns and scores with a kick to the near post. It's how the play should go, but at this age rarely does. My son sprints to him, arms up. They high-five and celebrate a moment, then turn to jog back to their positions. Last year, they would have hopped round madly, twirled, fallen backwards, and rolled in the grass. This season, they are serious. No more skipping, no more acting sweetly goofy. Now they turn towards one another rather than towards us. No more checking that we've seen. But we have. We know the score and what's lost as they try to turn themselves into men. Turning, a poem by Joseph Mills from his collection This Miraculous Turning, published by Press 53 and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Comes from Wild Oven, providing Juno with handmade organic breads delivered fresh to Foodland, Super Bear, and Rainbow Foods. Wild Oven, Juno's artisan bread.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. You're listening to us live from the KTOO studios, and as you can see, it's a party. And here we are. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. We have some fantastic women in the studio with Jeff. And we have Saralyn Tabachnik, who's the executive director of AWARE. And she is here with three of the four women of distinction, which is an honor that AWARE bestows on women of exemplary community service every year. And we have Andrea Caesar, we have Lieutenant Chris Sells, and we have Sue Douglas. And the Women of Distinction party, reception, ceremony happens this Saturday night at Centennial Hall. It starts at 5:30 with a no-host bar, silent auction, music from by Tom Loker, and then a dinner catered by Salt at 7 p.m. So, Saralyn, tell us a little bit about this main fundraiser for AWARE.
Right. Thank you, Joan. We are celebrating our 21st year, and we're so delighted to be honoring the women who you announced. Not here is Rena Sims, who was here yesterday, but we're just thrilled about it. The board of directors chooses, through nominations from the community, four women each year. It's never an easy process, and it's also so much fun. For me, I read the nomination forms, and, you know, I may know the women to say hi to or by sight, and then I read all these fabulous things that they're doing behind the scenes that I had no idea about, and it's really exciting. The highlight of Saturday night is that each of the women will speak about what inspires her, so we really get to know some depth and heart about each of the honorees.
That sounds great. So I have some questions for you guys, for you ladies. So we have Andrea Caesar, and she is a community and family advocate. We have Lieutenant Chris Sells, who is responsible for our Year of Kindness, the JPD's Year of Kindness. We could all use some kindness in the world every day, all the time. And then Sue Douglas, who is our assisted living champion for elders and serves on many boards, including the Juno Community Foundation, who is a generous donator to many of our social services. So here is your question to the fabulous ladies of Lyme. Up. So here you are being honored for your community service. To you, how important is community service, and what's the shout out to our listeners to get involved? So we'll start at the very far end over here with Sue Douglas, who is championing Juno's assisted living, well, hoping to change our assisted living situation.
Well, funny you should ask that.
It's one of the things I hope to talk about Saturday night when we each get to make a few remarks.
Don't give away your
I'm
speech.
Not giving away any
okay.
secrets. But I'm going to talk about it because what you asked is very important to me. And I think there's all kinds of opportunities for people in this community on all sorts of levels to become engaged with the community by helping primarily those nonprofit or service agencies that are already doing things for the greater good of the community. And there's ways that we as individuals can support them to do their good work. So that's one of the reasons that I feel really strongly about becoming engaged with what's going on in a place that I love.
Sounds great. And what about you, Chris?
Well, I think that people should look at community service and public service as something that's really personal to them and really impacts their hearts. I think when we look out into the community, there are so many things out there that we can do. And are we really looking at ourselves every day and saying, am I absolutely the best person I could be? Am I proud of me every day when I look back at what I did during that day? When I talk about people, if I was recorded, would I be proud of how I'm talking about others? And I think that we become more of the people we want to be when we commit to that public service, when we start looking at what is my contribution to the larger world around me as seen through someone else's eyes. Am I proud of me? And that's the question I'm encouraging people to ask themselves when they get up in the morning. What am I going to do to make me proud of me today? And I think that when you want to answer that question, that you have made yourself proud today, the arena to work in is public service. It's community service. There are so many opportunities for good works out there that it's such a rich environment. Just dive in. And not only can you help the world around you, what you're really looking at helping is who is that person inside? Who are you really? And what are you putting out there?
Wow, and now Andrea, you're there. We have Julie and Chris. It's a hard lineup, so yeah, you know.
Yes, it is. With me, children are important, and that's what we do. Our organization.
And what organization is that?
It's Glacier Valley ANS Camp 70, and we do a lot of. We work well with our brothers, our A and B Camp 70, and we earn money and give back to the community. And that's what we've been doing for years and years and years, is try to help other organizations that help the most needy in the community.
Well, ladies, it's been an honor to be in the studio with you. You know, each and every one of you have just devoted so much of your time and your talents to Juno, and I want to thank you for that personally on behalf of KTOO, and then there's Sarah Lynn and what she does with AWARE. And what I'm hearing from all of you is the importance of being part of something bigger than yourself. These are my words, and you can correct me. And also that everything we do is woven into the fabric of our community, that all these partnerships that we're talking about of, you know, nothing's in isolation. So once again, thank you, and congratulations on your honor. And it'll happen Saturday night, 5:30. Doors open at Centennial Hall for the 21st Annual Women of Distinction Reception and Ceremony.
And I rarely walk in heels. I wear combat boots for a living, so that could be very entertaining. I encourage people to catch that. There might be money out on how that's going to go.
Oh, my God. So you heard it. It's not enough to come honor these women. You want to go see if Chris Sells can walk in heels, which all of us have that feeling. Can we pull this outfit off? So anyway, thanks again for all that you do, including Sarah Lynn, and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody needs someone to show them what is possible. Everybody needs someone to go as far as she can see. I need to stand upon the shoulders of giants. I need a woman who's as big as me. When I was a little bitty baby sitting on my mama's knee, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. I needed to see women who were living without limits. I needed to see women making history. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Give me Amelia, who went soaring across the ocean. Winnie Mandela, who is gonna set her people free. Judy Chicago, who breaks all artistic silences. These women leave a precious legacy. When I was a young teenager, reading my 17, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. Women in the fashion mags were too small for my dream. I needed to see women just as big as me. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I know of women all across the nation, leading lives of courage in the face of fear and poverty. One lives in an abusive home, one raises her five children. Women, we need a new mythology. Now that I'm a grown-up woman living in society, I still look around to see just what the future holds for me. I still need women who are shooting like the comet, so I can leave my own starlight in this galaxy. And I say, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me their stories, they inspire me.
Okay, it is 28 minutes to the hour. It's Thursday, March 2nd. It's 28 degrees. Juno is in the middle of a winter storm warning. We're going to allegedly get up to 10 inches by tomorrow morning, and it's supposed to keep on snowing until tomorrow night. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and it is a Thursday show of big crowds here in the studio. So here we have, I wouldn't say Boy Scouts in number, but we have Boy Scout representatives in big numbers. We have Martin Suzuki, who is the district chair. We have Jennifer Brown, who is the district exec. We have Frederick Thurston, who's here to talk about Thurston Sin, who is here to talk about the Cub Scout program. And then we have Freddie Thurston, who I'm pretty sure is a Boy Scout. Is that correct, Freddie?
I'm a Cub Scout.
A Cub Scout. Okay. So why are you all in our studio? Jennifer, why are you guys here? What are you here to talk about?
Good question. Well, we have this weekend coming up our Maritime District Eagle Recognition and Awards Banquet, and that is our annual dinner where we like to recognize all of the Eagle Scouts who have achieved the rank in the past year.
Okay, so just for the record, I know what an Eagle Scout is, but let's say you don't know what an Eagle Scout is. What is it?
An Eagle Scout is the top rank of Boy Scouts. So it's something that the boys work very hard throughout their Boy Scouting career, which is basically 6th grade through 12th grade. And they earn different merit badges. They have to earn 21 merit badges to become an Eagle Scout. And they go through the ranks of the whole entire program. And then Eagle Scout is the culmination.
And they have a big project, too.
They have a big project, yes. Okay. So they work very hard for it.
Great.
Big achievement.
So where is the ceremony taking place?
It's going to be at the Prospector Hotel.
Oh, nice.
6:45.
Mm-hmm. What day?
On Saturday, this coming Saturday.
Okay, and it's open to the public?
It is open to the public, but we do ask that people buy tickets online on our website, which is scoutingalaska.org. And if you go under the Maritime District, you can buy tickets online.
Great.
$16.
So what does the event look like? So it's 6:45, doors open. Is it dinner?
It is. Dinner is served, and we have a guest speaker. It is Alaska Majority Leader Senator John Coghill from Fairbanks.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. How much are tickets?
$16.
And then everything goes toward the Boy Scout, this Boy Scout district?
Yep, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Martin Suzuki, you're the district chair. What would you like to say about Boy Scouts?
Well, let me see. I'll look at my notes here. well, one of the things I'd really like to talk about is an event that's going to be happening in the month of April. It's called Scouting for Food. And what happens is on the 1st of April, we'll have Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts going door-to-door, hanging bags that have flyers on there saying, please donate food. And the following week on April 8th, this is Saturday, we'll go by and pick up all that food. And all that food will go to Southeast Food Bank. And we're doing that in conjunction with the Juneau Police Department, Your Kindness.
No, that sounds great. That sounds great. Wonderful. So, Frederick Thurstenson, you're here to talk about Cub Scouts. What would you like to say about the program here in Juneau?
Well, what I'd like to say, I guess, is that the Cub Scout program isn't just for kids. It's it's a great program. This is my third time around. I started as a Cub Scout in 1957, and I've been a leader for most of the time, and scouting really did a lot for me. But the program is something that kids that are right now first grade can participate in up through fifth grade. And it's a program where it develops young men to be able to make ethical and moral decisions, and that carries on through their entire life. And they do that as well as having fun doing camping, hiking, first aid, different kinds of adventures. So anyway, that's probably what I wanted to say about it. It's just not for kids, and so everybody can jump in and help out on the leadership of the Cub Scouts.
That sounds great. So if somebody is listening and they're saying, I would maybe like to donate my time, how do they do that?
They can contact me, Jennifer Brown. Again, the website is scoutingalaska.org, and you can find my email on there. It's real easy, jennifer.brown@scouting.org.
Right. And you said it fabulously, Frederick, but also there's the really kind of amazing Boy Scout camp out the road as well,
yes.
Which is really wonderful. So here we have Freddie Thurstenson. He's 10. And you're a Cub Scout, correct?
Yes.
And what do you like about scouting?
Well, we do outdoor stuff a lot. We camp and canoe, and I like to do that because you get outdoors and you get to go on adventures.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for coming in today and
doing
what you're doing. And remember, tomorrow night, Saturday night, 6:45 at the Prospector, it's the Eagle Scout recognition ceremony and dinner.
Uh-huh.
And how many Eagle Scouts are you going to be recognizing?
We're going to be recognizing 5 Eagle Scouts.
Wow.
From Juneau and Sitka.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all for doing what you do. Okay?
My
and
pleasure.
Freddie, come back and tell us about one of your canoe adventures one of these days, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. All right.
Thank
We're
going
to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Along. Be prepared to hold your liquor pretty well. Don't write naughty words on walls if you can't spell. Be prepared to hide that pack of cigarettes. Don't make books if you cannot cover bets. Keep those reefers hidden where you're sure that they will not be found. And be careful not to smoke them when the scoutmaster's around, for he only will insist that they be shared. Be prepared. Be prepared and be clean in word and deed. Don't solicit for your sister, that's not nice, unless you get a good percentage of her price. Be prepared and be careful not to do your good deeds when there's no one watching you. If you're looking for adventure of a new and different kind, and you come across a Girl Scout who is similarly inclined, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be
All right, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. In the studio is Mark Wheeler, the owner of Coupa.
Hello.
With his wife, Jessica Paris, and a good neighbor and good friend. So you are here to talk about First Friday. What's going on?
Yeah, we have an exciting show. We have Eric Carlson is going to be showing some of his illustrations, and he's an archaeologist. So these really cool, intricate drawings of Juneau places that have been then overtaken by nature. So it's like imaginings of like what would the governor's house look like if we just let it go to nature, or what would the lucky lady look like? So really excited to have his art, and hopefully he'll show up here in a minute. I can talk to you more about him. He's been in Fairbanks, but just moved to Juneau, and is an archaeologist, been a lot of digs around the world and does these really intricate drawings. So we're really excited about that. And George Kuhar will be playing music during the opening, which is super exciting. I just love George's music. And he said he'll be doing atmospheric contributions at the show.
And
so,
it's kind of like your mini gallery.
So we do have a tiny gallery too, but we don't have a new artist this month.
Okay.
But we're looking for any youth that want to display art. We have room on our tiny gallery walls for like 4 or 5 pieces, and right now Cedar Fowler has some pieces up. They're really nice.
Cool.
Somebody even wanted to buy one the other day, but
that's great.
She didn't sell it.
Oh. And then Eric Carlson, how many pieces is he going to have?
I think he's got like 6, but I think they're pretty big.
Okay, great.
But it's going to be a great show, and it's going to be 4 to 6 is the opening. We are going to release an ice cream flavor tomorrow. I can't remember.
I just called
Dave and said, what's the ice cream I said we released? Because I couldn't quite remember. We even made a lot of fun ice cream. I just made a bergamot ice cream, which is the flavor they use in Earl Grey tea, which comes from an orange.
Really?
Never knew, but I was in California and they were selling these bergamot citrus. I was like, what is that? So I brought them back and I zested them into our ice cream base. It's really good.
Oh, it sounds great.
So
and
I think
if you
want
to know what the ice cream of the month is, you're just going to have to show up tomorrow.
Well, Nancy's going to come with the little flyer and remind me, but maybe she can mention that when she comes on in a few minutes.
Okay.
But if it's not the bergamot, it'll be something else good. And we're also selling pints to go now in the store, and I made a Meyer lemon custard ice cream that we're selling in pints. And
oh, wow.
It's like lemon curd and ice cream. It's so good. And Meyer lemons are awesome. They're like this sweet lemon, you know?
Yeah.
They have all this crazy flavor.
So you sound like a mad scientist, you know, like, oh, I'm going to try this now, and I'm going to try this, and it all comes out pretty edible and fabulous.
Most of the time. Maybe sometimes it takes a while. Like, we just won the Symphony of Seafood.
I want to ask you about that. So, and that what was the flavor for that?
It was a candied salmon ice cream with salted caramel ribbon.
Oh, my gosh.
But since we opened, I've been trying to work on a salmon ice cream flavor because, you know, we want to use local flavors, and, you know, you can't get more local than salmon. So it's difficult. It's been very difficult, very polarizing. But
I
think we finally
had to really work on this.
And then we did all these, on this last concert, we did all these tasting panels. We had customers come in and try these different versions. And so we arrived at this flavor, which is we choose Taku River Red's sockeye sandwich, which is the best fish on the planet. I mean, their stuff is so clean because they do this pressure bleeding at sea and use hypodermic needles, and it's just the cleanest fish. So we use their fish, which is wonderful, and we smoke it and candy it and dry it out, and then we make little flakes of that, and we're spinning that into the ice cream with a salted caramel ribbon. But it doesn't even taste fishy because their fish is so good.
Wow.
It's kind of smoky and salty.
So you won this. What was the proper title of the...
It's the Alaska Symphony of Seafood. They've been doing this for 24 years, and we're the first dessert entry they've ever had.
And now what happened?
Well, so we won the grand prize. We won the Juno People's Choice, and we won the food service category. But so they're going to send us to Boston with the other winners to the Seafood Expo North America, which is the biggest seafood show in North America. Like 10,000 people go to this thing.
Wow.
So we have to give away a lot of ice cream.
Congratulations.
Yeah. But I found a guy in Boston, this Rancatori's ice cream company is going to make the ice cream for me with some salmon. We're going to fly over there. So
excellent.
So we're going to cart 30 gallons of ice cream back with us.
Well, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks
by.
For having us on the spur of the moment.
Absolutely. Come by anytime.
Did you see Eric out there, Nancy?
No.
All right. Here we go. So Nancy Dutrony is now in the studio with
spoken
all
about
of us.
The bergamot?
Yeah.
Is it bergamot? Is that what I said?
That's what you said.
Oh,
chocolate bergamot
ice cream tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chocolate bergamot. Okay.
Chocolate bergamot?
Yeah.
Bergamot. I already sold that one.
Don't forget the chocolate.
Thank
you. So, hi, Nancy.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you for braving the winter storm watch.
Yeah.
So
it was tough this morning, I'll tell you that.
That is true. So it's a little busy in Alaska's capital city, isn't it?
Well, this is one of those gasping weekends.
Yes. So tell us what to do.
Well, we could start at the downtown library today, or from 4 to 6 right now. There's a Dr. Seuss birthday happening out at Nugget Mall with birthday cake.
That sounds fun.
Should go there. And then it's downtown family night at the public library later from 5:30 to 6:30. Have a light supper, crafts, et cetera. There's gospel workshops happening. Let's see. And then tomorrow is, of course, First Friday. We have this nice list that you can look at. Come by the Arts Council first and get your little list so you know where you're going, because there's a lot of places to go. We have three artists in our gallery, Terry Robus, Timmy Johnson, and Barbara Shepherd, and it's a fabulous show. It's just really, I've watched these ladies working over the years, and they're really, it's all different, complete, it's wonderful. So that it's called Kaleidoscope Eyes. And then over at the Alaska State Library Archives and a Museum, they have Rarefied Light. Then you go over to the Salt Cave. They have a special going on over there, 1 hour Salt Cave sessions at half price. And then, as you were just talking with Mark, he has Eric Carlson and George Kuhar and chocolate bergamot ice cream.
Right.
Okay. Very good. Now, I'm going back over to Front Street, Main Street, and 4th Street. Sketch Studio, which is MK's place. You can go there and get a little quick portrait of yourself.
Oh.
She's doing quick charcoal portraits and blind contour drawing of studio visitors. So stop in there. And she has new T-shirts available, and she's having a spring sale. So in case you don't know where Sketch Studios is, it's in the parking lot behind or next to Kenny's Walkin' Teriyaki. So as you're walking up to the State Museum or the City Museum.
Or behind that, I want to the big blackboard, right? It's
mm-hmm.
also kind of
yes,
like,
yes,
you know,
the things
that.
You want to do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, at the Downtown Heritage Cafe, it's Marissa Amor. I'm not sure how to say her name. I should find these things out. Annie Kales has Wood Eye Woodworking, which is Robert Fletcher's beautiful wood, with platters and mirrors and bowls and all sorts of stuff. Hearthside Books is having a Read Across America sale because it's Dr. Seuss's birthday. So 25 to 50% off on all kids' books just for First Friday. So stop
Ooh,
in there.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Some great children's books. At the City Museum, it is the 12x12 community art exhibit and John Hyde photographs. So two things to see. It's the theme for this year's 12x12 was ink. I don't know what that's going to lead us to, but something. Down at the Walter Soboloff building, they have a free gallery exhibit. They only open the Alaska Native Masks exhibit in the Nathan Jackson exhibit hall on First Friday. So this is the only time you get to go see that. And they're filming a special award-winning film for the rights of all, Ending Jim Crow in Alaska. I think that's at 5, 7, and 8, or 5, 6, and 7. Anyway, specific times during First Friday. And they have a special going on in the gift shop of octopus ink things. And I think stuff by Mary Folletti and Roz Cruz. So we like those things. Pretty Please is having an opening celebration. They're moving to 116 Seward Street. 11:30 in the morning is when the opening is, and there's a 4 p.m. party. So stop in there. There's so many things to go on. Are we running out of time here?
No.
Oh, okay.
We're okay.
Oh, okay. I thought you were giving me the
no.
better hurry it up. Okay. Downtown Dames has Abby O'Brien Jewelry. The Canvas has Jessica Hanlon. That the Barnaby Brewing is having bacon soda. In case you didn't get enough bacon last weekend, it's bacon soda. Kindred Post has live music by Annie B. Our own Annie B here. And let's see, the Alaska Depot has music by Carlos Danger, and they're having seaweed beer. Now, I'm not...
I'm not so sure about that, but I bet it's fabulous.
I bet it's fabulous because
it's... candied Tim and ice cream either,
Yes,
go.
They also have oatmeal stout. Cam Burns is at the Juno Artist Gallery, and Andrew Tripp and Frank Mooney are at the Trading Post, and Kindred, we already talked about Kindred Post with Annie B. There's just a lot of things to do. And then when you get all done doing those things, then you come back to the Jack at 7:30 for Motown, for our town. They're over there rehearsing right now. It sounds fabulous. it's a great evening of just having a good time. That's all I have to say.
That's the Motown King and Queen, right?
Yes. Jocelyn Miles, Al Dunn, and Alyssa Fisher are competing, but they're also just doing the whole thing. Now, then on Saturday is your last day to see West Side Story. This is your last weekend to see
Friday
West Side
and
Story.
Saturday, right?
Yeah, so you best be doing that.
JDHS, mm-hmm. That's a big collaboration.
Yes,
between
Opera to Go in their new configuration, and Juno Dance Theater is getting rave reviews, and you're about to miss it, so don't do that. And then on Sunday, we have our gospel celebrations, which are just wonderful opportunities, and in between the two gospel celebrations, one at 2 and one at 5:30, is dinner on the ground, fried chicken, homemade potato salad, macaroni and cheese.
You talk about this every time you
just,
come in.
I'm drooling.
You know, a little bit of a fan here. Every time you come in,
yes.
I get, but there's
this there's food.
Exactly.
And then on Monday, there is the 49 writers are having a book signing over at our place and in the evening. And then on Tuesday, it's Poetry Out Loud downstairs. And it's just like a
and the 49 busy writers, that's two poets, right?
Yes.
Jeremy Pataki
and Julie.
Yeah, that's
so I don't know what the rest of you are going to be doing, but it's busy around here.
It is. Well, thanks, Nancy, for all you do and for coming on in. And we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Okay. If you're not napping after all the things you're doing.
Actually, you'll see Megan.
Okay. All right. Nice seeing you.
All right.
So back in the studio with us is Mark Wheeler from COPA with Eric Carlson. And he is there. Eric is going to be featured at Mark's ice cream shop, COPA, this weekend. So thanks for coming in, Eric.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So Mark was talking about your pieces, about actual Juno sites possibly overrun by nature. Is that?
That's right.
What
I have a series of images that imagine an abandoned downtown Juneau in which buildings are partially collapsed, and you have a forest that is, beginning to reclaim the city. And all of these images are kind of modeled after the mining ruins down at Treadwell and also the AJ mine. I've got seven kind of close-ups of iconic Juno landmarks, including the state capitol building, the governor's house, Mighty Nimbus, and the Lucky Lady, and a few others.
All right.
So
how long have you been doing your art?
Oh, it's been a long time. I actually graduated from JDHS and was doing art back in high school here in town. And I've been an archaeological illustrator since most of my adult life.
Let me ask you a stupid question. What is an archaeological illustrator?
Most of what I focus on nowadays is reconstructing images of the past. So I'll work with archaeologists and members of Native communities and acquire a bunch of data about a particular site, maybe a 13,000-year-old bison hunting site from the Denali area is actually one of my most recent ones. But with that data, I'll recreate the landscape, recreate the people that were living there, and recreate the activities that that the archaeological data seem to represent.
That sounds fantastic.
And that all kind of ties together with the show at the COPA. So I've got this series of images that are kind of unstuck in time. Of downtown Juno. They could be, you know, ruins in the future, or they could be something from the past, or they could be some sort of a combination of the past and the future and the present all shown simultaneously.
That sounds great. How many pieces do you have?
There's seven.
And how long did it take for you to create?
It took a year. but those, I was just working on those in the evenings and stuff. And they all go through many different drafts.
You laugh, but that's seven in a year. I think it's pretty productive. You're like, oh, poo-poo. But I'm like, well, that sounds like a lot. So how does one become an archaeological illustrator?
Lots of volunteering and lots of suffering in the beginning. And it's, you know, I supplement that with actual archaeological field work. In the beginning, that's how I was able to feed myself in the summer times and then just volunteered in the winters. But over the years, I've developed a style and I've been able to to do this kind of work overseas and all across the country, and most recently in Alaska now for the last maybe 6 years or so.
That sounds great. So it's really interesting because all of us who get outside go past mine debris. Like if you go down Herbert Glacier, there's cars. You know, cars are just kind of a part of many wilderness sites here that's just normal for us. You know,
right.
You bring somebody with you from outside and they're like, what is that? Oh, that's just debris from 100 years ago or more. Yeah. And the same thing with Sandy Beach, which is a big recreation area. And is that the inspiration that you were just like, well, what if type of thing?
Yeah. I was born and raised in Douglas, right next to the edge of the Treadwell ruins. And as, you know, children, you know, my brother and I and our gang of friends would spend, you know, summers exploring those mining ruins. And I guess they've always been part of who I am. And I've always been fascinated with them. I've always found them very mysterious, especially at this stage in their, I guess, collapse and decay. They seem to be meshing with the wild vegetation that grows all around them. And so, anyway, that just kind of has sparked a lot of ideas in my art. And then when I was working here in town last winter, I just started thinking about both the Treadwell Mines and downtown and decided to kind of merge those two things together.
Sounds great. If you're just tuning in, we're chatting with Eric Carlson. He is a featured artist at COPA this first Friday, tomorrow from 4 to 6.
4 to 6, and we have some great art. And George Kuhar will be providing some musical atmospheric contributions. And then we have some bergamot ice cream, so come try all those interesting and eclectic artistic experiences.
That sounds great. All right, thank you both for coming
in. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to have to wrap up the show. It's 4 minutes to the hour. And yes, Juno is under winter storm warning. We're expecting 10 inches by tomorrow morning. Roads are going to be messy. Our chance of precipitation tonight is 100%. New snow accumulation of up to 10 inches is possible. Tomorrow, snow showers likely, mainly before noon. And then a chance of precipitation is 70%. Okay, Friday, partly cloudy. Friday night, Saturday is sunny with a high near 25. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer, and I am Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Have a great night.